taking names there. I'm an alcoholic member of the Riverside group. My name's Dick. My sobriety date, 6th of June, 1969. I came in when I was 3 years old. I'll tell you one thing. Every time you think you've seen everything and done everything, this is the least amount of clothes I've ever had on when I spoke in front of a group of people. But somebody said, give you a chance to show off those legs. I thought, well, I don't want to miss the opportunity here. And I can hide them right behind that microphone. Lordy, Lordy, I just love this group, and I love to see the people come up and take silver chips, and all the chips are 60 days and 90 days and 6 months and 9 months and in the years, and this place is alive with sobriety and alive with service, and I've never seen anything like it in the whole time I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. The enthusiasm and the service work and the looking out for one another and this kind of, it's just, you really have to, I appreciate it, and I hope that everybody that's been able to come to this group. I remember when I first came in and a friend of mine who had 9 months when I came in, he was 28 years old. And he and another guy about his age decided they'd start a young people's group. And after 6 months, nobody had showed up, and because they weren't around, you know, there weren't the young people around. When I came in, I was 40, which, let's see, must make me about 81 now, and. I'm kind of proud of that because my first wife said I'd never live to see 40. And she took me out to dinner on my 80th birthday. And I reminded her of that, and she says, I said 50. And there was a guy at Yana yesterday that picked up a four-year medallion, and I talked to him after the meeting. I said, how old are you? He was 84. I came in when he was 80 years old. I thought, my God, I couldn't have lived to 41, I don't believe. And so it's nice to be here tonight. This is, I told somebody, buddy, I think I said, this is really the least favorite thing that I do is get up, because I get a little... I hear all these young people get up, and man, they got bang, bang, bang. They got that story, and the kid gets up here with a short period of time, and he's kind of got it together. Of course, if I only had to go back to 1990, I could probably get it together, too. I got to go back to 1928. But I'm not going to try to go year by year tonight, because I've only I got a... They told me I had about 2 hours. I was born in the middle of Hurricane 1928, West Palm Beach, Florida. And my dad was a stenographer with the corporation that he worked for. 14 years later, he was a division manager with that corporation. And he was a workaholic and a lot of ambition. And... he set a real pace for the rest of the family, which I have a kid brother who just turned 77 and a baby sister who just turned 73. And they picked up on his example, and they both put their nose to the grindstone. They got good educations and were very successful financially. I consider myself very successful today because I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous and was able to find a new way to live, a way that I didn't know existed before I got here. and I'm hanging around with a lot of people that most of them I wouldn't have had a drink with. And because in spite of the way I was and what I did and the way I acted, I was always a little better than most people. At least I acted like I thought I was. Deep down inside, I never measured up. I hold several records. I attended the University of Florida for a year and never got a credit. Comes from being in the Alachua County stockade during the midterm exams, and nobody brought the exams. It wasn't my fault. And I remember getting called down to somebody's office in the school, and the only thing that bothered me was I hoped my dad wouldn't find out. His idea of giving you a good talking to consisted of whipping the belt off, and he was still banging us around when I was about 14 or 15. And we moved around a lot. By the time I was in the ninth grade, I'd been to 12 schools. And I thought, well, probably that's why I was an alcoholic. My brother and sister had been to 12 schools, and they're not an alcoholic, anonymous or anything else. My brother had a problem, and he drank like I did, I thought. And he did a lot of things I did. He came home and got in bed with his wife and told her he didn't love her anymore. He was in love with the barmaid at the bowling alley. But one day when he went to the doctor with some heart trouble, and the doctor said, you've got to quit drinking. And my brother said, when? And the doctor said, now. And he quit. For good. When I was 19, the doctor told me three things. I was throwing up blood, and I was in the hospital, and unbeknownst to me, my parents had put a psychiatrist in the bed next to me. And I can't remember even getting here tonight, and I remember that guy's name was Dr. Apple. And when I got ready to leave, he said, here's what you need to do. You need to quit smoking, quit drinking, put your girlfriend on the back burner, and go complete your education. And I thought, man, that sounds good. So I quit smoking and quit drinking for 2 weeks, and started smoking, started drinking, quit school, and married the girl. I started to think then I didn't like anybody telling me how to live and what to do, and if you told me, I usually did my best to do the opposite. I was 20 years old, didn't know. I remember telling some girl when I was 16, I've been everywhere and done everything. I didn't even know what there was to do, you know. I'm pretty impressed with that. I didn't know anything. I got married. I was still 14 years old. And I was 20 and she was 18. That marriage lasted for 20 years. And two wonderful daughters out of that marriage. By the time I was 22, we had two children, and I had gotten a job with the same corporation my dad worked for, and stayed with them from 1947 to 1969. Sounds like 22 years with the same company. 20 years with the same wife. Shouldn't have lasted a half an hour. I was a bad husband from the time I said I do until the day we got divorced. You'll surprise you, I was a womanizer. Had to drink to talk to women, and now today that I don't drink, I can't hardly talk to women at all. But I don't drink over it. And I don't know what kept us together for 20 years. And I used to quit. I was a guy that could quit drinking in I'd quit for a week. I ran around with this Catholic kid. He quit every Lent. He quit smoking and quit drinking for whatever Lent is, 6 weeks. I didn't join him with that. I watched him do it, but I could quit for a month. My dad used to quit for the month of January, and I thought that was a good idea. And then I decided I'd quit for the first 2 weeks of January. Usually after something that even I considered horrific would happen, I could quit. I got to the point where one of my hobbies was pushing people out of moving cars, and I was really quite good. First time was a little awkward, second time was nothing to it, and the third time you just reach over, click the handle, put the foot on the body, and shove them out the door. And that's while the car is still moving. And I remember after the last time I did that, I said, I've really turned into some kind of an animal here. I'm going to quit drinking. And I did, and I didn't have a drink for 392 days. I wanted to drink every day. I couldn't go where I wanted to go. I couldn't be with people I thought I wanted to be with. I just holed up in a motel and did crossword puzzles and read and just wanted to drink. And then on the 392nd day, I said, why would I ever quit drinking over something minor like that? I said, they didn't get hurt that bad. They had it coming. And I called a friend of mine up, and Ray McLeod. Oh, I can remember some things. He was an engineer with the company. And I said, I'm going to start drinking again. And how about you driving? See, social drinkers don't usually get designated drivers. So he said, okay, and he picked me up and took me back to the place where I used to drink, and I walked in, I'm going to tape her back on. I said, give me a glass of vodka. And the bartender says, we're not serving you. And I said, what do you mean? I haven't had a drink in over a year. He says, we don't like the way you get when you drink. Can you imagine somebody not liking me? I can't imagine it. So Ray and I left and went down the road, and I got good and drunk and came back and got the bartender all straightened out. And I was off and running again, and that was like in July. Short time after that, my wife had the audacity to go out with somebody else, which I frowned on for her. And I was playing golf with an attorney. I just said, Marty, I want a divorce. So we did that. That was in November 1968. In March of 68, I thought the company was after me. So I beat him to the punch, and I wrote up two resignations. I took them to a friend of mine who was operations manager. I said, which one of these do you think I ought to turn in? He said, neither one. You got to be nuts. You got 22 years in here. You got stock plan. You got the health insurance. You have blah, blah, blah. So I thought, what does he know? So I turned in and I quit. I was in real estate, and this broker I did business with said, you come with me and you and I'll both be millionaires by the time we're 45. And of course that sounded good to me. I thought, well, that'll cover part of my drinking and the tips. And he did. When he was 45, he and I were same age. When he was 45, he was a millionaire. When I was 45, I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And but you know, it's funny the way God had worked my life. I went to work for this broker, and of course he didn't tell me I had to work and all that kind of, you know, come to the office and talk to customers. And I thought you could just sit in the bar and make deals in the bar all day long. Didn't work. But in this office, there was a gal did the typing and answered the phone. And when, on a rare occasion when I'd go in, she talked to me about how she and her husband went to dances and parties and nobody drank and had a great time. And I used to think, I wonder why she's, you know, why would she tell me this? I'm calling in sick every day. If I could find a phone, or if I knew where I was, or if I could remember the phone number, or whoever I was with, if they had a phone. And she'd tell me these stories. And when I'm in the office, I'm sitting way back in the corner back there. I'm drinking. I'm moved right up to Listerine by this time. I'm drinking out of a quart bottle of Listerine. Keep my breath kissing sweet. Just in case. When I got divorced in November and New Year's Day in 1969, my daughter had been suspended from we were living in St. Pete, Boca Ciega High School, and she'd been suspended for coming to class drunk. So I figure I'll save her, and she and I moved over to Melbourne into an apartment that I'd never seen. I knew somebody that lived there, and so we moved in, and I put a little board up on the wall, and I was grocery shopping, doing the laundry. I took her to school every morning at 8 o'clock, picked her up every afternoon at 3 o'clock, and I thought one day, and I didn't drink. I quit drinking again. And I was going to be a sober, single parent. And one day I had the thought that before the guy knocks on her door with the Father of the Year award, maybe I'll slip next door to the lighthouse. There was a bar right next to where I lived, and have a beer. And so I went over and had a beer, and I had another beer, and I had two beers, and I had vodka, and I bought a quart of vodka. And now I'm taking my daughter to school on Monday morning at 8 o'clock, and I'm coming back maybe Friday to pick her up. And calling her wherever I happen to end up. If they had a phone, I would call her and tell her it was time to get up and go to school. And I would have to say, of all of the dastardly deeds that I had performed during my drinking career, this really got me. She was 17 years old. So one Friday morning, I'm in a motel over in Orlando, and I'm calling in at 8:30 in the morning to show them I'm alive and well at 8:30, and tell them I'm sick and not coming in. And what's wrong? I got whatever's going around. Hangovers were going around that particular day, and I had one. And she said, my husband's in the office today. Would you like him to come down, talk to you? Normally, I would, once I'm off the hook, I'd have said, no, I'm okay. I'm good. But this particular time, I said, yeah, I'd like him to come down. This old man, who's about 60, doesn't sound too old today, came down and came in the room, and I took a shower and shaved and got dressed, and he took me back to Melbourne, picked up my daughter, said, I'm going to try to help your dad with his drinking problem, and turned around and drove me all the way back to Orlando to the motel and said, I'll be by to pick you up 7:30 tonight. We're going to a meeting at the Alco Ann Club down on Skid Row. A man of my stature going to any place on Skid Row. And my biggest concern was, well, what'll I wear? I don't want to look too good. Because I was, 30 years, I wore a suit and tie every day of my life when I went to work. And so sure enough, he came by and picked me up and took me to the Alco Ann Club, Central Orlando group, and on a Friday night, there were 8 or 10 old people sitting around. Keep in mind, I was only 40 at that time. I was a kid. And I just spent most of the day. I didn't listen to much. I looked around a little bit. And wanted to see what an alcoholic looked like. The guy that picked me up certainly didn't look like one. He was driving a Cadillac. He had a suit on. Took a day out of his life. He was a commissioned salesman. And took the whole day from 9 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock that night. Spent it with me. And I've been trying to pay that back ever since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Anybody from out of town? Anybody first meeting? Anybody for White Chip? A little applause every time. I thought, man, these people recognize. You know, when you got it, you got it. I mean, let's face it. I thought, this is good. And then at the end of the meeting, he said, here's phone number, Earl Martin over in Cocoa. When you get back over there, call Earl. And he'll tell you where the meetings are, take you to a meeting. And I said, oh, man, I'm so grateful. And I got about 2 blocks down the road, rolled a window down, fired that information out, trashed that. And I said to myself, why would you go and stand up in front of a group of people and tell them your name is Dick and you're an alcoholic? God. I'm off the hook now with my daughter and work. And so that was a bad idea. And I went back to where I lived, and I didn't go to a meeting. I didn't call anybody. I went down to the, I looked the club up and went down and parked in front of that, but I couldn't get out of the car. My landlord came by one day and said something to me. How's it going? And I said, good. I went to a meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. Another mistake. Guy says, welcome. We've been waiting for you. There are 11 apartments there, I believe, and there were 5 people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd never seen the place till the day I moved in. And if he had been there, he was away at Christmas up north. He wouldn't let me stay because there were no children allowed there, and I had a 17-year-old daughter. But because he wasn't there, we were allowed to stay. So God was really working overtime in my life. I didn't know it. I thought I was lucky. What a coincidence. And I'd seen these people go out almost every night. He had a 57 Chevrolet, and they'd all pile on that thing, go to the meeting, and a couple hours later come back. So I piled in the Chevrolet, 57 Chevrolet, every night, and he recognized my executive abilities after a very short period of time, put me in charge of coffee and setting up the chairs. I've given up any idea even working then. So, and that was the start. He introduced me to a guy who's my closest friend today, who just turned sober 41 years. The guy that was 28 that tried to start the young people's group. He hadn't had a drink since. And the amazing thing is that old man took me to that meeting that night and I never had another drink. I mean, defies explanation. And anybody that's here tonight, the message is you don't ever have to have another drink either if you don't want to. If you just avail yourself of the friendship in here and the people, God, people just want to grab onto you and hold you and help you if you just let them. Even for a guy like me who didn't want anybody to do anything, I figured they had an angle. They do. Everybody's got an angle here today. They want to stay sober, and that's one of the things we do to stay sober is help the newcomer and spend the time, like Dr. Bob's last message. Never forget that somebody took the time to explain the program to me, and I've never forgotten that. And I get more joy out of that. I get joy out of everything that I do. This is the least amount of joy I get right here. But my sponsor said I am obligated. If I know anything that helped me stay sober, I am absolutely obligated to share it with others. And so I try to do that. And I try to tell you that for a guy that didn't even know what he wanted when he got here. He had no God when he got here. He was uncomfortable. When I was 90 days sober, they said, you're speaking in 2 weeks. Jesus. And another guy with 90 days, he was going to chair. We went up to Cocoa Beach. They had a whole Orange Creek kind of a podium like that. And the part of it, he didn't shake apart. I finished it off, you know. And this guy was 50-some years old, very successful. He'd retired. He had a lot of money, and he went to Europe every year on the Queen Mary. And he says, I don't think I can do this, because he said, I always sit at the head of the table, and I taste the wine. And I don't see how I can not do that. And he could. He did it, you know. And the last time I saw him, he was in his condo in Satellite Beach, drunk, and later on that night he put a shotgun in his stomach and he quit drinking right then. So I've seen a lot of that. That's really stopping drinking the hard way. The upside to that story is that the guy was, he and I were about the same size, and after a month or so, his wife called and said, I got all the bills closed here. I didn't have a job or anything else, you know. Would you like to come up and pick it up? Houndstooth slacks, and expensive sport shirts, When I was 10 months sober, my buddy called me from the first apartment. He said, the sheriff's department's here. They got the wrong place, man. They're looking for you. And I thought about calling my sponsor for a minute, and then I thought, I'll call him a little later. So I jumped my car and went to Syracuse, New York. I called him from there. I said, what do you think of the idea of me leaving town for a little while? He said, where are you? I said, I'm in Syracuse. I did that a lot, you know. I gave him the small things, like, do you think I ought to take an umbrella to the meeting? But when you get married and that kind of minor stuff, I'd been sober already almost a year. I knew most everything in the... Why bother anybody with that kind of stuff? But, God, what a journey. We had a meeting today about God and going back to your religion that you may have had before you came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And when did you have your spiritual experience, and it was hard for me to say, but I can tell you what I did. I sat in the back row of meetings when they talked about God. My buddy and I'd nudge each other and tell jokes, I never thought this, that part of the program was going to be any part of me. I had a habit of making fun of things that I thought I'd never have, that I wanted, but I didn't think I'd get it. And so over the past 40 years, everything has changed for me. Today it's the most important part of my life. When I was drinking, I'd get in front of the TV when Billy Graham was on there. Billy, help, Billy, help. And I hear people say that those prayers weren't answered. Mine were. He helped, you know. God helped. I'm here. Didn't do it. I wasn't struck by lightning at the moment. And 1974, I moved to Orlando and hung out with a guy named Clarence Snyder. He's the brewmeister in the Big Book, and I don't think he's in there now, but he was. And his sobriety date was February 1938. And he was a Big Book and a Bible thumper. He used to have retreats out here in Brandon. My future ex-wife was having trouble staying sober, and he told her one day at a meeting, I want you to come out to that retreat. And I drove her over here from Orlando, and They put her in a bunkhouse with about 20 Bible-banging women. And she said, I turned to the wall. I didn't want to hear it. I couldn't get out of there. I didn't know what to do. At the end of the retreat, a bunch of them went up to the house up front and to pray. And she went with them. And they said, do you want us to pray for you? And she's like me. She said, yes. She says, I don't know where that came from. And they held hands and they prayed for her. She's never had another drink. She was sober 34 years on the 13th of September. I called her to congratulate her. Such a miracle. And then I had a phase where I got a book with a day-by-day thing from Oral Roberts. I don't know whether anybody's ever heard of Oral Roberts in here. And he was an evangelist, and he said, oh, God, I thought I was done. Thank you, Katie. And so he sent a thing out in the mail, says, if you can get out here to Tulsa, he was building a hospital that time. It was going to be staffed by spirit-filled doctors and raising money. And if you can get out here, I'll house you, feed you and everything. So my wife and I jumped on the plane, went out there, and I went up on the stage and had him lay hands on me. And I went to the Pentecostal church with Clarence and his wife Grace, and I've run down that aisle so many times in so many churches. You know, they call anybody who wants to be, and bang, I'm up there. And he had a guy from Tampa come over to his house. Bill Daly was his name. And he was laying hands on people. Clarence would have, his house was always full of people, and he took them through the steps over the weekend. And Bill Daly was laying hands on people, and I got my head right in there, you know. But I didn't feel anything. You know, I was always thinking that I needed to have some sort of somebody was going to say something, or I was going to read something that was going to, boom, I got it, you know. God is here in my life now. But it didn't work that way for me. But what did work was people who had spiritual experiences shared them with me and pointed out some of the things that had happened in my life that I had absolutely nothing to do with. Like getting to AA for openers, you know. Like standing in front of the judge when I did come back from Syracuse, and I went in front of the judge over in St. Pete, and his opening statement was, Mr. Drysdale, I have no alternative to put you in jail. And an hour and a half later, I walked out of there, I was a free man. What did I have to do with that? Nothing. And so these things kept happening in my life, and it was pointed out to me that, you know, how's this happening? I started to have a little faith, and I watched things happen to other people, and I could see where no matter what kind of turmoil it was, that they were able to get through it, and they had a faith. And a guy says, you know, it's kind of like I had a broken arm one time and put a cast on it. By the time I got the cast off, man, I, you know, it was just weak. But the more I exercised it, the stronger my arm got. And faith is the same way. The more I believe it and the more I see it in my life and the more I use it, the stronger it gets. And and today I can tell you that I absolutely know for a fact that everything is going to be okay. You know, the Bible says it came to pass. It never said it came to stay. And everything in my life, every single problem I've had for the last 40 years has been taken care of. Most of them, I don't even remember what they were. You know, but at the time they're happening, I thought it was going to be forever, you know. A broken romance, or lost my job, or didn't have any money, and blah, blah, blah. Boo-hoo. You know. Now, as you say, pour me a drink. And guy told me, in your case, self-pity is justified. I got to think about that a little while. That's the same guy that said, you don't have an inferiority complex, you're really inferior. But I don't feel that way today. I'm comfortable no matter where I go. And the fact that that I have this conscious contact with God in my life today, that I can put my head on the pillow at night and it's not racing like it used to keep me up half the night wondering. I was either living in tomorrow or living in yesterday. Wesley Parrish down in Pompano, you see, I keep one eye cocked on yesterday and the other eye cocked on tomorrow. I'll be cockeyed today. And man, when I can remember that and stay in the moment. Like, how are we doing right now? Right now we're doing okay, but man, after the meeting, you can't believe what I've got to do and go through. My favorite saying is, my life is a series of tragedies, most of which have never occurred. You know, I go through all of this exercise, and I'm saying this, and when they say that, I got both sides of this thing all covered, and it never happens, you know. So I have no idea I had no idea I was going to be up here tonight. In fact, when I came in and I saw people coming up this way, I thought, damn, they're having that meeting over there where I can't hear anything, so I'll leave probably and go someplace else. And Lloyd led me through the servants' entrance over here. And then Bill got me. And so what do you think about speaking? I'd rather be sitting there listening, you know what I mean? And but it's been a terrific journey. That little girl lived with me, who's 17 years old. She's 58 now, and she's a minister. Who'd have thunk it? My other daughter is going to be 60 in 3 weeks. She's a court reporter. I moved over here and 6 years ago, 2003. I was going to say 1903. I'm old, but not quite that old. It's been the best thing. I got divorced. After 27 years, I hung around. My first marriage was 20, and then I next one was 5. That was really a bad one. And the last one was 20, 26 or 27, something like that. I'm good friends with my ex-wives. I've never seen the second one I look for, trying to make amends. But I plan Tuesday, hopefully I'll be going up Dade City. Hopefully my last ex-wife. Unless somebody here sees something in me that I don't. Anybody for an announcement? I'm available. But I hope to go up there. Her dad will be 96. And on the 13th. And I want to go up there and spend some time with them. Some of the things happened when I was fired from my job in 1978 on a Monday, and I had bought a sailboat on the previous Thursday. I was sponsoring two boys were living in a mission, and I went over to the mission. I said, "How'd you guys like to live in my house?" They lived there for 7 years, and my wife and I lived on the sailboat for 7 years, and we went to all through the Bahamas and up and down this coast of Florida and down to Turks and Caicos and Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico and St. Thomas. And people would be on seawall here, and they're saying, I wish I could do that. And I did say, you could. I moved on that boat in 1979. I was 51, and I got off when I was 58. Greatest adventure I've ever had. People says all those boat people are drunks, all drinking. You know, I didn't run into that at all. Man, I'll tell you what, you don't want to be drunk out there when the weather, you don't want to be out there, period, really. But so that was one of the nice things that happened when my youngest daughter got married 10 years ago, 11 years ago. And she asked me to walk her down the aisle, and I agreed to that. And I said, why don't you ask your mother's husband, who really picked up the financial slack when I was unable to and helped her. I said, why don't you ask Doc if he wants to go down the aisle, and the two of us walked her down the aisle. And that's all because of the program. All because of the program. And I'm just so grateful to be here. I no problem. But I would encourage anybody in here that really wants to, if you do the deal, and you don't have to do it perfectly, you don't even have to do it well. I'm a prime example of somebody who did a lot of things wrong and didn't do a lot of things and took a long time to do some things, and I was able to stay sober and finally was able to incorporate the principles of this program into my everyday living, and it's such a freedom that I have today. I tell you one more little story. When I went up to Syracuse, I was unemployed. I applied for a job up there, and darn, I hadn't worked in 10 months when I first came to AA. I applied for a job up there, and they wanted to hire me in Albany, New York, and it was April, I believe. And I was dressed about like this. You don't want to go up to New York, upstate New York, dressed like this in April. So I thought about it a minute, and I had an interview, and they said, we're good. You're good to go. I thought, I think I'd rather be in jail in Fort Lauderdale than I would work up in Albany, New York. And I came back, and I really felt bad. I didn't have a place to live anymore. I'd moved out of my apartment. But I had met this girl, amazingly enough, and she had a 4-bedroom home and a job. I had neither. And so I moved in there, and I'd left her phone number with the company up there. Man, I was down. I don't think I'd ever been that down since I'd been stopped drinking. And Monday morning, the phone rang, and it was the same company, and they said, we have an opening in Fort Lauderdale. Would you be interested? Of course, I was. And the thought occurred to me, if I'd have gotten drunk, I wouldn't have answered the phone, because I don't answer phones when I'm drinking. I don't go to the door. I don't open the mail. I don't do any of that. But because I stayed sober when things looked that bad to me and bleak, and I didn't take a drink for a couple of days, and Monday morning my life changed again, and I went to work for that company for half of what I was making before. And you say at meetings, I'll be forever grateful if I ever get another job. And forever was right around, 90 days, I think. And in the 90 days, I should have been in charge. I was doing a better job than anybody there. Certainly more talented. Better looking, of course. And so I interviewed around, and I found another job, because my sponsor told me, you should hang in there for a year. And I hung in there for a year, and I went right from that job to another one, which paid me more than I was making when I left the company after 20 years. So my life has been a series of miracles that still occur every day. And I'm in love with this program, and I'm in love with the people in it. And I'm in a position now where I'm, this moment, I'm in charge, so I have a couple announcements to make. I'm trying to form a, if you've seen the application for the softball tournament, it says you have to have four women on the team, on the field. Well, I took that as sort of a slur that there was a handicap to have to have four women. So what I'm attempting to do is form a all-woman softball team, and we'll show them. I'll be the manager, of course. But, you know, I'm serious. So if anybody's interested in that, the thing is on the 31st, so we've got about 3 weeks. And this could be, you know, it's nice to say, I went to that meeting the first time it ever opened, or I heard that guy speak the first time. You can look back years from now and say, I was on the first women's softball team in Tampa. In fact, I'm going to have some T-shirts made up that say that. So I want to thank you all for being here, and I want to thank Bill for asking me.
Hey, I'm Corey. I'm an alcoholic. Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous in Cleveland, Ohio, 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this, with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all have the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would have liked. So my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into two words, love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard the erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it with kindness and consideration. Intolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, give us a little pat on the back, or take us to a meeting or two. To have done numerous little kind or thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we are not willing to attempt to that help which has been free, so beneficial to us. So to our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.